presented by DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
I will admit off the top of the show, I don't relish what I'm about to do, because the one thing I never want to be thought of is a wet blanket, someone who ruins other people's good time or ruins other people's fun mood. I don't want to do that, but there is one thing that's been kind of floating around about the Georgia offense that I start to suspect might have been exaggerated just a little bit, not intentionally, no ill will behind this, but there is a thing in life where newness brings about a sense of excitement. Even at your job, you can be in a list, you know, long row of cubicles. Just moving from one cubicle to the other brings with it, at least for a couple of minutes, a little excitement about just anything being new. We kind of get tired and we grow weary of the mundane over time. So I imagine that's probably especially true of football. Something new happens and all of a sudden there's a lot of curiosity about how much different things are going to be and how much better this new difference might actually be. For Georgia, that means trying to wrap your mind and your arms around what the offense is going to look like with James Coley now as offensive coordinator instead of Jim Chaney. And for a lot of Georgia fans, and we talked about this last week, but for a lot of Georgia fans who themselves have been curious about this, that curiosity was maybe kicked up to a fever pitch when Tyler Simmons, when he met with the media — Simmons, the veteran wide receiver in this group right now — when he met with the media, he talked about the offense, and dare I say, he might have gotten just a little bit carried away with his description. Here's what Simmons said at the time.
Of course, it's going to be a kind of a change just coming from two different OCs, but Coley's bringing a lot of juice to the offense. He's trying to kind of balance the offense a little bit more. You're going to see a completely different offense this year, and it's really going to be fun. It's going to be an exciting offense, and I'm hoping that everybody will enjoy that.
What's going to be different about it?
Like I said, he's going to bring more juice. We might have a couple more balls in the air.
I mean, listen, it obviously stands to reason that if you are a wide receiver, Tyler Simmons, you would like nothing more for there to be a few more balls in the air. Not because Simmons doesn't like the Georgia running backs, and not because Simmons doesn't believe the Georgia game plan up to this point has been a successful one. I'm sure he believes all those things in full measure. But deep down, receivers want to catch the football. And deep down, everybody thinks they haven't gotten enough touches. We just know that. That's just a thing in life. Everybody thinks they deserve a little more touches. So it's easy to imagine new offensive coordinator, some of the things that Simmons thinks he ought to be getting, some of the things that the other potential pass-catching targets ought to be getting. It's easy to assume that's going to happen with the brand new Georgia offense led by James Coley. In fact, when I first addressed this on Dog Nation Daily, I believe it was last Wednesday, a week ago, I said, hearing Simmons right there kind of reminds me of some of the natural enthusiasm that existed from tight end Charlie Warner when he also was asked a similar question back during the spring. Now, quick defense of both Simmons and Warner. It's kind of hard to talk about offensive philosophies with the media and fans anyway, because they are deep in the weeds of all this. If we listen to them talk behind closed doors, most of us wouldn't really understand what they were saying, because they speak in the kind of insider language of football. So they're having to, I don't want to say dumb it down, but they do have to make it a lot more casual when they talk to the average fan, when they talk to the average reporter. So these are difficult topics to discuss, but it is worth noting that what Simmons said in the clip you just heard did sound a little bit similar to something that the tight end Charlie Warner said going back to the spring. Here is an example of that.
I think his first instinct would be to throw. You know what I mean? So, I don't know. I can definitely see us throwing a little bit more, which I think would help us in the run game as well. You know, opens up the run game because they're scared of the pass. So
listen, once again, Warner is very much like Tyler Simmons. Deep down, he'd obviously love to get more targets his way. Deep down, he'd obviously love to catch more footballs. So you've got him during the spring say, I think James Coley's more of a pass-first offensive coordinator. You got Tyler Simmons the other day. This offense is going to be completely different. There's going to be a lot more juice, the word that he used, meaning a few more balls in the air. Well, here is the part where I have to be a wet blanket to the fans who hope that Werner's right, who hope that Tyler Simmons is right, who hope that the Georgia offense does, once again, to use this same word again, to hope it has a little more juice. Here's where I have to say, I'm not quite so sure it's going to work out that way, because Charlie Warner, the Georgia tight end, also met with the media again yesterday. And remembering back to what he said during the spring about Coley maybe being a little more pass first as an offensive coordinator than Jim Chaney was, the previous OC there at Georgia. Well, I included the question here to give you context for the answer. Listen to how the opinion of Warner has kind of evolved now that he's spent a little more time. Take a listen.
When you spoke during the spring talking about James Coley, you said that you thought his tendency might be a little more pass first than maybe his predecessor. Now that you've been with him for a little bit longer, how has your opinion of Coley's play calling philosophy kind of changed?
It's, I guess, what I said in the spring and to how I think now. I think we're a really balanced offense, as in if we want to pass, we can do it well. If we want to run, we can do it well. You know, it's not everyone, you know, thinks we got to be 50-50, but we just got to be really good at both. I think that's what we're going to be.
Tyler Simmons called it a completely different offense. Do you agree with that?
I guess after Saturday, you can say it just the way he calls plays is makes it seem different. It's different. It's different a lot of ways, but it's the same a lot of ways. It's hard to explain.
Now, you can be left to interpret Werner's words there however you would like. I take those to mean, no, now that I've had a little more time to look at this and be around this, experience this, this offense actually reminds me a little bit more of what we've been doing in the past. We still want to be balanced. We want to be able to throw the ball when we need to, but this isn't going to be a wildly different offense led by a drastically different offensive coordinator. I also take that to be good news. Many of you, though, do want to see more offensive passing wrinkles from the Georgia offense, and I completely understand where you're coming from. And maybe contrasting Simmons' description of the Georgia offense to Warner's description right there, you're left to wonder, well, what is the real truth on all of this? What is the Georgia offense this season really going to look like? Well, we'll all find out ourselves starting August 31st, but obviously around these parts, we don't wait that long to start speculating. So you hear Simmons, you hear Coley, you hear Warner there. Let me also bring James Coley into this, because when Coley met with reporters a few days ago, I also think his description of this actually does give you a little bit of a sense of why Werner may possibly be right about what he says, and Simmons may be possibly right about what he says. Here is James Coley to potentially kind of tie all of this together.
I think in the pro-style game, you coordinate to your players. Players, not plays, right? It's a little cliche in the coaching profession, but it's the truth. Players, not plays. So Coach Smart is all about players and not plays. You know, I think he definitely preaches that to us. And sometimes as coaches, you forget and you're like, man, this scheme is really intriguing. But are your players touching the ball within this scheme? So I don't know that there's been an adjustment. I've been here several years. I think that the philosophy that we have here at Georgia is that, you know, who's touching the ball and are they the guys that are going to give us the biggest impact? But you definitely got to play for towards your strength.
So what James Coley says there reminds me of something that Kirby Smart has said in the past. Do y'all remember, I think it was spring of 2018, when Kirby got like one more tight end question than he had the patience for, and he just kind of blew up and exploded. And he went on to talk about why Georgia's tight ends hadn't been more involved in the offense. And one of the phrases that he used is, a tight end has got to be a matchup nightmare. I take that to mean you've got to be able to run away from linebackers. You've got to be able to post up safeties. You've got to be able to just do things that makes it physically very tough to stop you. Well, apparently maybe last year Isaac Nata was a little bit more of a matchup nightmare because he had more than 400 yards receiving. But hearing Coley there say, we're going to scheme towards our players, not necessarily towards the kind of plays that we want to call, leads me to believe that, yeah, maybe there actually might be a few more balls in the air this season, as long as one of the guys that's potentially catching that ball becomes a true matchup nightmare, goes out there and runs past a defensive back, goes out there and blows the top off of a defense. Now, the good news is there is seemingly no shortage of candidates to potentially do that, despite the fact they haven't done it yet at Georgia. Lawrence Cager's caught touchdowns at Miami. Demetrius Robertson, who, you know, I think a lot of fans are excited about, was a freshman All-American going back to Cal in 2016. By all means, we know what George Pickens is at least capable of doing based on the viral video of the one-handed catch he made, to say nothing of Simmons himself, Dominic Blaylock, and others. So I think the opportunity is out there for this offense to have a little more juice. The opportunity is out there for the ball to be in the air a little bit more and to satisfy what Werner said that he wants to see, which is the overall balance, the ability to throw the ball when you need to. But the way you get there is not going to be through James Coley being some sort of passing game mastermind and far different from Jim Chaney. No, as Coley said, it's players, not plays. Can the guys who will be on the receiving end of those throws go out there and become the kind of matchup nightmare where you have to get them the football? That's ultimately what's going to be the determination of just how different this Georgia offense comes out to be. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Hello to you, and thank you for being with us live on video today, 10 a.m. Dog Nation. Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, radio at noon, of course, and our friends there in Athens on Athens Sports Radio, 960 The Ref. And we are available as a podcast wherever you find them, including the world-famous DogNation.com. Really glad to have you with us today. Now, I know you got a lot going on. You may be driving right now. You may be working out right now. You may be doing 1,000 things. Can I have your undivided attention just for a few seconds, though? I'd love to have it for the entire show. I'll never pretend that listening to me is the only thing you're doing right now. But if I can have your attention just for a little bit, let me tell you about this. We are really excited about next Thursday. August 22nd is the date. And how about this, if you're watching on video right now, a great look at what it looked like last year when we were at the Kroger Marketplace right there in Cumming. It's going to be an incredible time. Do we have the address? Can we show folks that coming up this, I should say next Thursday at Kroger, right there, 5550 Bethelview Road in Kroger. That's from 6 to 8 p.m. this Thursday, August 22nd, Kroger Marketplace. It's our Kroger kickoff to start the season. Now, I'm going to be there. Jeff Sintel's going to be there. Connor Raleigh's going to be there. A whole bunch more surprises in terms of who we expect to be there and be a part of all this. This was one of the most fun things we did last year. I think it's the best possible way to start this upcoming season. It could be a dream year for UGA, and getting a chance to talk to all of you about that coming up this, or I keep saying this, it's actually next week. It's next Thursday, August 22nd. I cannot wait to be a part of that. It's going to be an incredible time. Our Kroger kickoff to start the season, Thursday, August 22nd at the Kroger Marketplace right there, 5550 Bethelview Road incoming. Please come on out and see us for that starting at 6 p.m. that night. I'm going to tell you a lot more about this between now and then, but it's going to be a really good time. Speaking of good times, coming up in just a couple of minutes, we'll also talk to our buddy Jeff Sintel for our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update. We'll get the latest on UGA recruiting from him, including recruits' reaction to the George Pickens viral video from yesterday. This will be fun. We'll do that with Jeff in just a second. Before that, though, yesterday I had a chance to be in Athens and lucky enough to spend a couple of minutes with Georgia left tackle Andrew Thomas. Now, getting a chance to speak to Thomas was important yesterday because Kirby was not happy with the scrimmage from Saturday, and you get the indication that, well, he made it very clear that the Georgia starters were a group that he was not impressed with, and there were some rumblings and some whispers that first string offensive line might have been kind of within the bullseye of Kirby's eye are going back to Saturday. So how does Georgia plan on fixing that? How does Andrew Thomas plan on leading that charge? He spoke about that and a number of other subjects yesterday. Let's let you hear me with Andrew Thomas right now.
Because the offensive line does have some of the preseason accolades it has, do you guys feel more pressure to be the catalyst in that moment to get Georgia out of a funk in a situation like that?
As an offensive line group, we try to be the leaders of the team. We try to carry the team. So anytime we're not doing well, we try to, put the team on our back.
When there is a personal challenge about what's been said about you, I mean, how do you react to that personally?
It's just motivation, but you got to stay the course, do your technique, and hopefully everything takes care of itself.
When you came in, there are obviously a lot of guys in Georgia's class that were from the state of Georgia. That's actually more of a rarity for UGA now. As a Georgian, what does it mean to be playing for your home state?
It's a dream come true, being able to represent the G, represent my family is pretty cool.
This is admittedly a little bit of a tough question to answer, but when Smart says something like he says on Saturday, how much of that is in your mind, well, this is just what a coach is supposed to say this time of year, and how much of that is, no, he really means it?
I think Coach Smart means it. We didn't, looking at the film, a lot of third downs, we didn't win. We didn't meet some of our goals as far as, scoring points and things like that. So when the facts line up and say we didn't perform well, then what he's saying is probably true.
Always fun to get a chance to speak to a Georgia tackle, Andrew Thomas. And by the way, make sure you check out the Dog Nation YouTube. Simply just search Dog Nation YouTube. You can find our YouTube channel and more content from Thomas. Charlie Warner's up there. We actually have two copies of the Charlie Werner video for some reason. You can see that. You can see Mark Webb from yesterday. All the interviews that come out of Athens, you can see all of those. And as we head towards this upcoming Saturday and another Georgia scrimmage, when you hear Thomas talk there about what did not happen for the first team this past week, you hope to see the buzz on that change going to Saturday. As Georgia leads into the start of the season, it's those key leaders for Georgia who ought to be in the forefront of that conversation, Andrew Thomas included. So we'll look to see how the chatter changes here over the course of the next 7 days or so. But for now, we'll put the current season on pause. We'll take a look at the future when it comes to UGA recruiting. Let's welcome in our buddy Jeff Sintel right now.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Of course, time now for our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update with Jeff Sintel, talking a lot about UGA recruiting. Some 2020 stuff here, some 2021 stuff to get to here, and kind of everything else in between, I guess, for a moment. Of course, we will talk about running backs, too, because why wouldn't you? But, Jeff, let me start this way, if you don't mind. On our program yesterday, and this is no big surprise, we obviously had a very fun time reacting to the now viral George Pickens video of what I jokingly called the greatest catch in the history of football. I did think it was a dazzling highlight, and I did suggest yesterday, Jeff, that I don't know how this video got onto the internet, but I don't believe that Georgia is all that upset about the fact that it did, even though it was recorded during a supposed to be private practice, football practice. And I think the reason why Georgia is kind of okay with this being out there on the internet is because you had guys like Rick Gilbert talking about this on Twitter. And I don't know that it makes Georgia more likely to get Gilbert, but I do think Gilbert's a pretty good stand-in for a lot of other five-star recruits. When they see a five-star showing out at practice, it creates the kind of buzz that Georgia wants to be a part of, does it not?
Well, it definitely does that. I mean, it's going to be really hard for people to police those things in the age of phones, Brandon. I mean, I think that scrimmage had some, live stats that were being called out during the middle of the game. Kirby was on a mic, kind of entertaining everyone with his encouragement of certain position groups and certain phases of the game. And I think with the pick and catch, you're going to see a lot of that anyway, because right now there's going to get a point where Georgia feels comfortable where it is in the physicality of its game and the run game, and then it's going to back off a little bit, maybe want to throw it around a little bit more and definitely get some seasoning for all these young receivers. And I think the main thing is everybody knows what George Pickens can do. Auburn saw him so many times. They worked him out. He was in their camps. Everyone scouted George Pickens. He was at all the showcase camps, the openings, everything else like that. And I think as much as Georgia wants to dial down the hype on some of these receivers, I think George Pickens is actually a little bit taller than what he's listed as with his height. I think everybody knows and has a good idea about what George Pickens can do. I think the only secrets are how much better he's gotten in 2 or 3 months in Athens.
And I think the point that I'm trying to make is I think that Georgia is of two minds on this. When it comes to a guy like me, hyping up the current season, that's what Kirby Smart wants to downplay, and he attempted to do that in his post-game press conference on Saturday. But when it comes to how future playmakers at the college level view this, I don't think Kirby Smart wants to downplay that all with that audience. In fact, I think to the extent that it's possible, he wants to turn the volume up on that as much as he possibly can, because let's face it, when you and I have talked about a Rick Gilbert, and heavens knows we have talked about him a ton, that conversation is centered around whether or not a unique playmaker like Gilbert might turn out to be believes George is the place he can be used. So, you know, there is a very specific audience I think Georgia has in mind in terms of how a video like that might travel around, whether they're the ones that put it on the internet or not. I think they like the idea of the Pickens and the Gilberts and the Darnell Washingtons and maybe the Marcus Rosemies, or, you know, you start naming 2021 names if you want to. I do think they like the idea of those guys seeing it, and I don't think they want to downplay the significance of that with that audience really at all.
Yeah, Brandon, I think to me it's going to be the magical or non-magical part of this upcoming season is pretty simple. I mean, I think by and large, Georgia under Chaney averaged last year around 40 points per game. And how are they going to do it in order to be considered elite? Are they going to have to take that to 47, 45, 48 points? that's a very small margin of going from very good to elite. And I think maybe the James Coley offense is going to need a lot of these exclamation point plays, like the ones that Blaylock, like the ones that Demetrius Robertson, and the ones that George Pickens are clearly capable of. I've heard this on the trail, Brandon. There has been definitely negative recruiting about Georgia and the throw game. It is no simple fact. A yeoman can look through the Georgia stats and see that Mecole Hardman had the highest receiving game for any Georgia receiver in 2 years last year when he put up 103 yards. And that's a very pedestrian 103 yards compared to the high-octane offenses of college football today. But simply put, Georgia didn't have anybody go over 100 yards receiving in a game in that magical 2017 season. And in 2018, they only had Mecole crack the 100-yard mark at 103. And for people that want those metrics and yards per pass attempt and 1,000 yards receiving, that's how they get there.
So let's do one more thing on this topic before we change the channel and talk about something different. I think it's really interesting what you said. I'm not surprised to hear that that kind of negative recruiting has been going on. In fact, I assume that's exactly what's been going on. But we also heard James Coley, and I played this audio before you came on the show, talk about the offense being built around players, not plays. What I take that to mean, and I explained this myself just a few seconds ago, that means for the guys on the outside, if you want to have receivers getting more than a low 100-yard total, then you've got to go out there and dominate the opposition. You've got to go out there and run past defensive backs or do what Pickens is capable of doing and go high point the football and simply jump higher than everybody else. You've got to be the kind of player that you have to feed the football to because you create the kind of one-on-one matchup domination that requires that. With all due respect to the receivers that Georgia has had under Kirby Smart, and a lot of them did big time work for the Dogs, the fact is they weren't first round picks. They weren't a top 10 pick the way that AJ Green once was, and that's what the potential of a George Pickens is. Dominic Blaylock, a little bit different kind of player, that's his potential. Even Demetrius Robertson, who has the kind of blazing speed that gives him a chance to really create some separation because he uses that aspect of his skill set. There is something about these Georgia receivers that could create the kind of one-on-one opportunities where Georgia is a little more willing to feed them the football than maybe it has been with some of these receivers in the past, even though no fan would say a bad thing but the guys that have come through this program in recent years.
Yeah, that's the hard part, because you look at a guy like Riley Ridley, for example, and I guess most would say he's the most polished receiver, all-around receiver of the Kirby Smart era at Georgia. At least that's what the NFL draft, which is a pretty good arbiter, tells us. Riley Ridley, he only had 14 catches his sophomore season. And then he goes from 14 to 45 after his junior year and explodes a little bit. You know, with all this about, and even Mecole, and he's making big plays in the NFL, and he's got well compensated to do that, he never caught more than 35 balls in a game. And sometimes when you look over these passing stats and the tight end usage rates come up, hard to remember, you look at Isaac Nauta, and Isaac Nauta had 7 catches in all of his sophomore season. And those are the things, those wow factor plays that I think everybody wants to get to. I don't think Georgia's ever going to have a couple of guys with 60 catches in a year. That's just not the way they're built. But they need to have more of those guys, like a Blaylock is capable of, a D-Rob is capable of, and a Pickens is capable of, in creating those kind of sports center plays, but also maybe rolling away with 3 catches for 133 yards or 4 catches for 150. I think that's the explosion, the 50 or 60 yarders. I think that's where Georgia needs to go.
Yeah, listen, you can run your way to an SEC East title. You might even run your way to an SEC championship. But if you want to win the college football playoff, you have to add that extra dimension. And, Jeff, sometimes when you and I are together, we talk about the possibility that maybe this year or some future year, Georgia might sign the best class that's ever been signed. I think that kind of rarefied air in recruiting also means that you check every box and you eliminate very easy pathways towards negative recruiting, which means playmakers like the ones we discussed, Darnell Washington, et cetera, or Rick Gilbert, who in this particular case retweeted George Pickens. I think that you've got to be able to convince guys like that this is the place where fun things can happen for you offensively. It's one of the reasons why there's extra pressure, I believe, on Georgia for 2019. Let me remind you, you're listening to our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update. Marlowe's offers a feast for your senses. That's all your senses. You know, obviously your sense of taste is going to be taken well care of with the chef-inspired food and the craft cocktails, but you know it's a feast for your eyes as well. The best people watching the city is right there at the tavern in your neighborhood. It's a good-looking crowd, and it's the kind of place you want to be a part of. So check out the Marlowe's Tavern right there closest to you, because at Marlowe's, it's all in the twist. All right, Jeff, let me at least offer a bit of a twist on our typical conversation as of late by getting into the 2021 class for a moment. We've been heavy 2020 the last few weeks, but there is some interesting movement with the class of 2021, and a lot of this comes from what you've written at DogNation.com, including Caleb Williams, the quarterback, who is getting ready to start his senior season. In fact, he's excited about that. He's got a big, big, high-profile Week 1 matchup really in just a few days. And it doesn't seem like the momentum between Williams and UGA is really slowing down right now. This is a fun prospect. We haven't talked about him probably as much yet as we probably should. My guess is that's about to very much change. So give us a quick primer on what you learned from writing about Williams and where you think things are going with him next in his terms of his relationship with UGA.
Well, Williams is a guy to really take in and watch a lot. Look at those highlights. Look at the way he throws the ball off platform a little bit, rolling around and kind of spraying it everywhere with velocity. Looks a lot like an Aaron Rodgers type, a guy that can throw off a lot of planes. Brandon, I've been doing this for multiple seasons now. I'm kind of going up on 20 seasons now of really taking a close eye at high school football games. And, man, that game that we have in the middle of that story on DogNation.com that posted last week where they're two scores within the last 15 seconds, and Williams accounts for, I think, three of his six touchdowns and 200 of his 400-yard passing yards in the last, like, 3 minutes of the game. And most people were reading that. They were wondering if that post was sponsored by Sour Patch Kids Candy, but I can tell you it wasn't. The young man just likes it. He's got a great personality, comes from a culture of just wanting to win. And that is the number one target for Georgia at quarterback in the 2021 class. And if you and I were in the habit of putting together a 2021 list on Hedges every week, Caleb Williams would be firmly entrenched among the top five names, among the top three names for the 2021 class.
So the assumption that many people are going to have, maybe myself included, that the work that Georgia has seemingly been doing in that sort of Beltway area, D.C., Virginia, Maryland area, is one of the things that paves the way for Caleb Williams. How true is that, Jeff? Georgia's presence in that Mid-Atlantic region, is that kind of what has opened the door here for Williams, or is it something else?
Well, I think Lanning, great recruiter that he is, that's one of his territories, and he kind of got cozy up there with recruiting Mekhi Sherman, but then also Trey Scott was going up there to kind of look at Brian Breezy for so many years. And I just think it's part of the Georgia brand expanding a lot, but it's also with Williams, man, he's been coming to Georgia since his eighth grade year. And there's a lot of stuff out there about Williams, but I was kind of intrigued to learn that he's been kind of taking a look at Athens in Georgia since he was in the eighth grade. He's been to Georgia about five or six times. And I think the question is, for those that go, come on, Jeff, Brandon, this is a 2021 kid. Why am I getting all worked up about this? I'm so excited about 2019. You've got me fully involved in the 2020 recruiting class, but I'm going to pump the brakes on 2021. Well, I'm going to say this. This is the number one rated dual threat in the country, and yet he has been given the keys to his offense since the beginning of his freshman year. That means he went to the line with all the audibles. He could have two or three run plays to check to, two or three pass plays to check to. He could align protections, and he could do that at an early age. And we're talking of, when we're bringing up dual-threat quarterbacks that Georgia has recruited over the years, Caleb Williams is a guy that is going to be playing and starting for 4 years at a very high level. He was the Gatorade Player of the Year in the D.C. region after his sophomore season. And here's some natural class separation. Carson Beck, who has first-round talent and a first-round body with that arm and his skills, He'll show up at Georgia in January of 2020. Caleb Williams, much like Mekhi Sherman, plays in a league where they don't allow mid-year graduates, which means Carson Beck will arrive in January of 2020, and then Caleb Williams won't even show up until June or late May of 2021. He will not enroll early. He will not have a chance to really go hard for that job in spring practice of 2021. And I think that creates some natural separation between this committed Georgia target and this very high-profile Georgia uncommitted prospect in terms of Caleb Williams. Now, let's not get our card ahead of our Sour Patch Kids here a little bit. What that means for Gunnar Stockton in 2020, we're just going to have to find that out.
Yeah, I think that's a really, really fun thing to watch, just simply because of the fact that Caleb Williams is such a unique prospect that, listen, this is definitely one worth paying close attention to. Speaking of that, much the same way for the class of 2021, you've got James Williams, another guy that you've written about at DogNation.com, a very big safety. And Jeff, in learning a lot more about Williams here as of late, including some of the stuff that you've written, I'm inclined to put him in the category of what we've done in 2020 with tight ends. What are Rick Gilbert, Darnell Washington, potentially Theo Johnson, are to the tight end position? Athletes so unique for that position that they have outsized value. I think of James Williams as being a version of that for 2021. When you have a safety that's that tall, that obviously can go up and knock balls out of the air, create the kind of havoc in the defensive secondary that Georgia's looking to create, this to me is a Darnell Washington type safety. The kind of guy that plays the position in such a way, brings an athletic skill set and repertoire that makes him more valuable even than the typical elite player at his position would be. Do you agree with that evaluation of James?
Yeah, he's definitely different. And I'm glad you kind of brought up a lot of those names, Brandon, because that's exactly what I think. I think of those names when I think of James Williams, but perhaps for maybe a different reason. When I see him, of course, he's got a great story. He's got all the size. He's rated number 4 overall in the country for 2021. Georgia's recruiting him heavily, yada, yada, yada. All those recruiting blotter points show up. But for me, I started thinking about him a lot when I saw him in late May at the 7-on-7 championships. I saw him everywhere. I saw him encouraging teammates. I saw him breaking up balls on the perimeter. I saw him breaking up balls in the middle third, the back thirds. I saw him make 3 interceptions in about 11 minutes. All that was good. But then when I saw Theo Johnson, Darnell Washington, and Mr. Gilbert working at the opening, and I saw their size and the way they run routes and the way they went up and got balls where they could be covered, but they're not going to be covered at maybe 10.5 feet in the air, that's when I started thinking about James Williams, because I thought there's nobody really in college football that can cover a 6'6", 6'7", tight end like a Williams, like a Johnson, or like a Washington, especially once they get into the system, get acclimated, and polish off their routes. But then when I think of James Williams, I think that's a guy that can do that. You need a James Williams, and whether a Gilbert or a Washington or at Georgia or at Tennessee or at Alabama or at Clemson, Georgia's going to need that type of personnel matchup to be able to negate and play those balls in the air amongst those huge, giant-sized new wave tight ends.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Let me finish up with this. Tank Bigsby did on Friday what we expected him to do, and he chose Auburn. There was some chatter in our Facebook comment section, our YouTube comment section, about Zachary Evans, the 5-star running back on Instagram Live, recently saying that he was getting ready to commit. I didn't see that with my own eyes, but a lot of folks in our comment section said they saw it. So, Jeff, I'll ask kind of an open-ended question, and we'll probably do this a lot. With Milton already in the fold, where do things stand now, and where do things go next with UGA running back recruiting? That's obviously a topic that's on everyone's mind right now.
I think, Brandon, should this gentleman eventually commit to Georgia, which is their speculation that he will, there are tea leaves out there that maybe he's feeling great about Georgia. The good news will probably need to be what sometimes I think of when these conversations come up. There's really no news, but do you have any reassurances? Do you have any warm feelings? Do you have any new drips of things going on? And, should Zachary Evans choose Alabama, or he choose Texas A&M, or he choose Georgia sometime in the next weeks to 10 days to before the start of his senior year? We said this a lot, Brandon. This is one of those that – What is that our mamas used to say, you know, watch pot never boils?
Yep.
Well, this one is going to take forever to look at, and he won't boil over until he finally signs during the early signing period.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you on that, and I've said this, I think, both publicly and privately, that speaking as a fan for a moment, even if Evans were to commit soon, and if he were to commit soon, my assumption would be that Georgia would be the leader to land that commitment, at least for now. But in terms of holding on that all the way to the end here, kind of the way that you expect Georgia to, obviously with a Mekhi Sherman or a Kendall Milton, some of the other elite recruits that it's gained pledges from, I just see Evans as a completely different kind of guy than that. Not that I don't think Georgia could win this recruitment, but a public commitment from Evans would only go so far in making me believe that this is a guy that's truly destined to be a part of the Dogs class. That might be accurate analysis, that might be inaccurate analysis, but that's pretty clearly what my feeling would be.
I think the only way that most would feel good about this situation is if he makes a commitment. And let's say he makes a commitment to Texas A&M. But then this is a young man that kind of seems like he's always on this path that he's going to take his visits. But let's say he chooses a Georgia here. Unless he says something like shutting down 100%, not even that 100,000%, but he involves something that says no more visits, that's the only time where you start thinking, okay, maybe something seismic or different has happened here, but I don't expect that to be the case. But when Georgia fans like yourself look through all the chatter and they hear about Instagram Lives and they see these different analysts weighing in their predictions, it's something to think about. But it's also something that everybody's just going to have to sit there and wait it out, because I think Zachary Evans is one of those fluid recruitments. I know that's an overused term in the likes of recruiting, but it is just what it is. I don't think any finality will happen until everything has been said and done with Zach Evans. But the thing is, Tank Bigsby, what he chose, where he went with going to Auburn, how Georgia's feeling good right now about their chances with a Zachary Evans. He's encouraging preferred walk-on commitments on social media with their commitments, because he got to know everyone during that last cookout visit. All these things seem pretty good right now for Georgia, and that's really about all we can offer the viewers and the readers on this one, that Georgia seems to be in a good spot right now for Zachary Evans until things and moves start happening.
When things change on this, if they do, the place you might find out about it first is at the Dog Nation Forum. You can find it for yourself at forum.dognation.com. It's completely free to be a part of and read or comment on yourself. So check that out and become a part of the Dog Nation Forum and really be a part of this community that's following all these recruiting moves as they happen. Once again, the website, forum.dognation.com. Jeff Sintel is in there every single day. We appreciate you being part of our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update. Check out all the really fun things happening there at Marlowe's, the chef-inspired food, the craft cocktails, Marlowe's special twist, and all that kind of stuff at the tavern right there at your neighborhood. Jeff, thanks for making time for us today. We appreciate that, and we'll look forward to getting a chance to talk to you soon.
All right, guys, from one Dog Nation point of perspective here, we're in the mid-stretch of camp. Classes are starting this week. Sometimes no news, which means no bad injury news, is the best news of all. See what's happening to Alabama right now.
Yeah, that's a really good point. We'll get into that coming up in just a moment. Jeff, thanks so much, and glad to have you with us here today as part of Dog Nation Daily in our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update.
Thanks, buddy. Be well.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Really good stuff with Jeff. And let me try to make a quick point off of something he said, and I'm going to try to make this short because it's kind of nerdy, but it did come to my mind. I do think James Williams, go to DogNation.com and read Jeff's piece on James if you haven't. I think he's a really interesting prospect because he is this tall guy. And as Jeff said, if you think about, you may have a Darnell Washington on your team or you might have a Rick Gilbert on your team, but somebody else got the other one. You got to have somebody that can play against that guy, and the big tall safety may be the future version of the guy who would be able to do that. It actually really reminds me of something that I talked to Mark Webb about yesterday, the Georgia defensive back, because obviously Georgia's making a push for more havoc plays. Interceptions are a part of that. And fans love interceptions, and every coach says they want to force more turnovers. But there's a huge school of thought in football that turnovers can't be forced, that fumbles, you're just as likely to fall on a loose football as your opponent is. Over time, those kind of things even themselves out. Interceptions are essentially a ratio of your overall passes broken up. Somewhere between 20 and 25% of the passes you break up, the defensive plays that you make on a ball in the air, can turn into an interception over the long haul. You can't do a whole lot to juice that ratio. So I asked Webb yesterday, so what do y'all do to try to get more interceptions, given the fact that there is this large belief that this is a kind of a lucky component of football? And Webb said something really interesting, and it's the reason why Georgia recruits guys like him, big, you know, stocky, thick defensive backs, or James Williams in the future, tall guy. He says, well, what Coach Warren says, meaning Charlton Warren, what Coach Warren says is, you got to play your man first. And that may sound like a simple statement, but it really, I think, speaks to what Georgia's trying to do. That football, I believe, at the level that Georgia plays is at, is becoming less and less about scheme and more about having the kinds of players put in the right position go out there and just dominate the guy on the other side of the field. That's the kind of receivers that Georgia's recruiting. It's the kind of defensive backs Georgia's recruiting. Receivers who overwhelm the opposition's defensive secondary, and the kind of defensive secondary that will not be overwhelmed by the likes of what Alabama and Clemson bring to the table. So all this talk about new coordinators and new wrinkles and does so-and-so know somebody's playbook, if you got the better players, for the most part, it does not matter, and that is what Georgia's trying to build. With that said, let's talk about the SEC through for just a moment. And there was a lot of attention paid yesterday to the fact that Dan Mullen apparently said that he is confident that Brenton Cox will be given immediate eligibility at Florida. There are, I believe, two things going on here, and this is worth pointing out. For anyone who's in sales, you've heard of the assumptive close. This is the thing where you assume that the answer is going to be yes, and therefore you attempt to coerce a yes out of the person by simply assuming that's what it's going to be. When Mullen speaks to the media and says, yeah, we assume that Brent Cox is going to be eligible, he's got a great case, a great argument to be made. Deep down, I don't believe Mullen thinks that for one second. I think that he's trying to offer his own tepid version of the assumptive close. Mullen's a terrible salesperson, so it's completely transparent. You can see right through him, but that's what he's trying to do. The other thing this Brenton Cox thing is about, and Georgia fans, don't take your eye off the ball on this one. It has been a rough few days for Florida. What's the guy's name? Is it John Huggins? Is that the guy's name that was just kicked off the team? What, domestic violence accusation number 5 for Florida since Dan Mullen's been there? Ugly details. Hard to know what's true and what's not. Dan Mullen, on behalf of Huggins, has denied much of it. But there was that weird dust-up between Mullins and the Mullet, as some of y'all like to call him, and the writer for the Tampa Bay Times. That's bad PR for Mullen in Florida. Getting everybody to say, hey, don't look over here. Look over here at Brenton Cox. We stole a player from Georgia. Never mind the fact that he might have been down the depth chart just a little bit. But look at this player we got from Georgia. Y'all don't look over here at John Huggins, and y'all don't read what the Tampa Bay Times is writing. Look over here and see what's happening with Brenton Cox. That's what's going on here, folks. Don't get tricked by that. That's what Dan Mullen's trying to get you to do. Let me talk about Tate Martell and Jaren Williams for a moment. This is not really an SEC story, but it does have at least a little bit of intrigue for SEC fans. Jaren Williams, the former Black Knight from Central Gwinnett, was named starting quarterback at Miami. Tate Martell, who transferred to Miami from Ohio State, presumably because he thought he'd be the quarterback there, did not practice yesterday. This is kind of an interesting situation for a few SEC angles. First of all, if Martell pouts about this, and if he goes somewhere else, I think it hurts future players who want to transfer, because it's kind of more bad PR for a transfer portal process that hasn't worked out well for the NCAA this season. Lots of hypocrisy, lots of inconsistency. If Martell shows himself at Miami, that hurts the NCAA on this, and it hurts future guys, maybe including Brenton Cox, who kind of want to have liberal transfer rules. So Martell, his actions right now potentially impact others. Also, I saw the gambling market has reacted unfavorably, presumably anyway, to Williams being named the starter. I saw where the overall total for the Florida-Miami game in week 0 dropped by like 2 or 3 points simply on the basis of Williams being named the starter over Martell. I'm not quite so sure that's the case, though, or going to be the case. A good prediction. Williams had some SEC offers. At one point in time, prior to Justin Fields, Georgia even showed a little bit of interest. He was a fast riser during the recruiting process. I'm not quite so sure that Williams isn't just the actual better quarterback over here, but this is kind of a juicy soap opera. If you like college football soap operas, that is one of those. Jeff also mentioned Josh McMillan, the Alabama linebacker. Injured, looks like he's out from the out for the season. This is the second big blow to the Alabama linebacking corps, at least during this summer. Yabi Anoma also transferred from the program recently. So I talked yesterday about the Alabama depth, but at a certain point, there is a level of attrition that can impact that depth. Alabama has been tested with its linebackers now for a couple of years, and it looks like right now, a position they were already maybe a little thinner than normal, they're going to have that depth tested even more here in 2019. That's a storyline worth watching. We'll make that your SEC through. Now, here on Dog Nation Daily, speaking of linebackers, that position group, especially the outside linebacker group, is going to be in the spotlight for Georgia now because of the fact that Brenton Cox is not there. I don't believe that Cox was one of Georgia's first outside linebackers anyway, whether you call him a starter or not. I don't believe he's one of those. I don't know many people who do, but it is one fewer name, one fewer elite prospect in that group right now, and so there are going to be some questions about this group now that Brenton's going to wear that ugly orange and blue instead of the silver britches of Georgia. So coming off the scrimmage from Saturday, how did the outside linebackers look without Brenton Cox? Well, Kirby Smart addressed that when he spoke to the media.
I have to reserve judgment on that until I see the tape. I don't know everything, how every guy played. I know Nolan made a couple plays out on the perimeter. We lost contain a couple times with Walter and Jermaine. They got to do a little better job there. Those guys are really working hard. We got some really good athletes in that group. I've been really pleased with the work ethic in that group thus far.
I think that last statement's pretty important. I've been really pleased with the work ethic from that group. In other words, I don't know how they played on this particular Saturday, and y'all know how it is, long scrimmage. There's going to be some good and some bad. Kirby Smart says, though, I like the demeanor of this group right now. But how about the idea that it's one body fewer than it was before? I even speculated during our R.S. Andrews cooldown of, I wonder if Georgia would give a guy that at one point in time could have been an outside linebacker, like a Quay Walker or Channing Tindall, do they give him an extra look at outside linebacker now that inside linebacker actually seems like a somewhat deep position? Kirby Smart says there won't be any need for that.
No, we're way over. We have one of them on the field most snaps. So if we have one of them on the field and there's six of them, then I wish we were that deep at every position. So we don't. I mean, sometimes we get two of them in regular, but not a lot of people play regular anymore. So we sometimes get two of them in third down. We sometimes get two of them when people are in large sets. But it's probably the most underutilized position because they have to take more snaps on special teams.
So what Kirby's saying there is we don't need more outside linebackers because in what has now become kind of a base defense for college football with five defensive backs, it's actually the outside linebacker that either comes off the field or in some cases back in the Lorenzo Carter era kind of becomes that fifth defensive back, at least to a certain extent. So Kirby says in a regular defensive situation, you've only got one outside linebacker on the field in a lot of cases anyway. So I think that Georgia's plenty deep with its outside linebackers right now. And in fact, much like we said with wide receivers to kind of start the program, it's not only deep with bodies, but there are also some potential names to kind of break out and give that position group something it quite hasn't had in the Kirby Smart era, which is major league production. A lot more sacks, potentially a lot more tackles for loss. That is certainly something that fans are hoping to see. And coming up on August 31st, we'll get a chance to see that with our own eyes. So before we do our Gator Hater Updater and get ready to get out of here today, let me offer some congratulations. UGA, named top mascot in college football by Sports Illustrated. Now, I know this has been kind of a long time ago, but hasn't Sports Illustrated already done this like about a decade or so? Didn't they name UGA top mascot in college football? That was a different UGA, of course, but I guess it's nice to see UGA regaining his crown as the top mascot in college football. I am, of course, biased on this, but I do believe that this is well-deserved for UGA. You take some of the other live animal mascots. I mean, Bevo acted the fool at the Sugar Bowl. I mean, I think that disqualifies him from consideration in this. He can't handle the spotlight. He can't handle the big time. But UGA, always a stately gentleman, always class act, a well-deserved reward, top mascot in college football. By the way, no Gators in the running for that, but there is a Gator Hater Updater. How about 1,018 days since Florida's beating Georgia? We'll see you tomorrow here on Dog Nation Daily.